This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan. Coming up in an hour, we're going to talk to our pal Chris Nockey, the voice of the Terps, color analyst, as the Terps, of course, won at the buzzer yesterday. So we'll talk to C-Nock coming up in an hour. But join us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in DMV. It's Evan Washburn, CBS Sports reporter. What's up, Evan?
What's going on, fellas? Good morning.
Hey, just quickly, how do you like covering the tournament versus covering football?
I love it for the period of time that it is. I couldn't do this at the length and intensity that we do football, but it's the most rewarding because I include conference tournaments. I did Missouri Valley and Mountain West, and then I'll do the first and second weekends of the tournaments or whatever that is, a month sprint. It's awesome. It's so fun. It's stressful because you're crashing. The prep isn't what you would do for football. Mm-hmm. But to be a part of something where I feel like everybody's watching is always cool in our business. And it's cool to be around college kids. Even though they get paid now, they're still young. So I enjoy that.
Evan, I have to check in on the well-being of, I think it's your right knee. You did a stand-up, during the Omaha-St. John's game where I guess the Omaha coach has had a tradition of beating up a trash can. I don't know a lot about it. So you did like a knee drop onto a trash can on TV. Are you okay? Are things good there?
Yeah, it was a risky move. I initially was thinking about trying to do the people's elbow.
Okay.
I actually talked to the coach, and he was giving me pointers on how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably going to be a bad idea. I've had two knee surgeries over the course of my life, so I was a little concerned there. But we came out okay. Bruised, but it was worth it for the bit.
I mean,
that's
good.
The fourth game of the day. You're just looking for something to get you through the marathon.
You committed to the bit. That was impressive.
So, Evan, you were there in Providence. You had the McNeese-Purdue game, and you had the Arkansas-St. John's game. Let's start with the Arkansas-St. John's game because of the firepower on the court and also with the coaches. Just had a question about the interviews, the coaches' interviews during the timeouts. Do your producers tell you that you have to ask two questions, or is it just based on the answer, like how long the answer is to the first question? Because Patino tried to walk away from you after the first question, and then you asked him a second question. I'm thinking maybe he's required to ask two questions by his producers. How's that go?
No, it's more the latter. So it's a really great thing that's specific to the NCAA tournament, kind of resembling the NBA deal. The way it's been described and the structure of it is 90% of the time it's one question. You're permitted a follow-up if it's relevant to the first question.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually don't use that opportunity for a follow-up, but I do specific to that exact thing where it's the two-foul situation. And it's really because Steve Lapis and Andrew Catalan, the guys I'm working with, and the viewers and listeners, they're hearing them talk about Kadari Richmond being having two fouls and questioning how's Rick Pitino going to handle this. So it's my responsibility if I'm going to talk to Rick Pitino and, you know, a minute from them saying that or 30 seconds or whatever it ends up being is to get some context. But I don't view that as worthwhile as your main question. So it's usually a quick follow, and I've done that multiple times. And it's more probably just a situation where most coaches are used to it being one, so he thought it was done, and I just wanted to try and get that in.
Hey, you just did a little walk. I mean, maybe a two-stepper, and he answered the second question.
Yeah,
he was great. He handled it awesome. And That's the thing. It's really challenging. I'm, as a former athlete and guy who lives and breathes sports and being at events, I know it's challenging for these players and coaches to be pulled from the most competitive, intense environment of their, sometimes their lives, to talk to me. So I really try and maximize the time by being super efficient with the question and get them in and out. So I appreciate the way these guys handle it.
So, I mean, obviously Steve and Andrew were talking about it, as you were, when he took RJ Lewis out. And he was 3 for 17 when he took him out. I can't remember exactly when he took him out, probably 10 minutes left in the game. So you could correct me if I'm wrong. But didn't put him back in, and it was a tight game. It was kind of shocking. I know Lapis kept saying, you know, he's got to put him back in. This is one of his best players. Kind of give me your thoughts on the back and forth you guys were having and what you noticed with RJ on the bench.
Yeah, it was even started early, and you could tell, and sometimes players, it's just not their night. And right. And I thought the image that set the whole scene and kind of really helps describe it was Zuby Ejiofor, and our cameras caught it, kind of in some ways shaking RJ to try and get him going. That becomes a philosophical or a strategic coaching decision. And I think while I love how Lap lays out his opinion, that's what he's paid to do. Rick Pitino's been doing this a while. He's been pretty successful. If he sees something or notices something, they live with these guys 24/7. So if he sees something in RJ's game or his demeanor that he doesn't like, to put him out there just because he's their best player statistically in that moment, that's an opinion that's going to go for the coach. It is unique to, for the final 10 minutes of a game, not have your best player out there for sure.
Right, right.
Hey, before we get back to basketball, and this is basketball related, can you explain this Amir Khan phenomenon? Because you were there for part of this. I mean, I read something, it seemed outrageous, that he has $100,000 in NIL.
That's accurate. It's more. I got the whole deal. I mean, if I'm to believe his now manager, who, to add to the greatness of the story, his name's Reed Feel, he's officially Will Wade's special assistant, former walk-on at LSU, played for Will Wade. But when the Amir Khan thing exploded, he took on Amir's management requirements or duties of dealing with all these brands. Mm. And he told me it's getting into mid to high six figures. We're talking 20K for a tweet. He's in full influencer mode, and that's what it is. And look, we try and stay relevant and knowing what's happening in the world, both socially and culturally. I can't understand it, but it's that's what it is. This is a great example of he connected with an audience, and people can't get enough of it. I mean, the other aspect, we didn't get to show it, is in the hallway. I come out of our green room, and the hallway's jammed with all the staff of the NCAA in the arena, and they've all got their phones out. And I'm like, what's going on? They're like, oh, they're all waiting for Amir to come out. Like, so it's that level of influencer culture, I would say, invading March Madness.
Yeah. Has a coach ever refused to talk during the TV timeout?
No.
Are they required to?
They've forgotten that they are required to do it, and I have connection with either assistant on the bench or their SID to, hey, we're at the under 12, just remind coach. And again, like it's there's been moments of challenge with it and moments, but I always say, like, I think, and maybe you guys, you're watching the game, so you have a different opinion, but if a coach is angry, happy, or sad, it's a win for me or for the viewer, because you're getting a sense of the emotion and what's actually happening.
Yeah. Just kind of based on what you saw from Arkansas, they got some stud freshmen. Boogie Flan is finally back. He missed, I don't know, a month and a half because of that injury. Stud freshman, obviously Carter Knox, stud freshman. Wagner, a really good player. They got athleticism. They got length. I mean, now that we're down to the Sweet 16, anything can happen. I could see Arkansas going on a run. I could see any of these teams going on a run. I could see Maryland going on a run. Just kind of your thoughts on Arkansas, the way they play to close out St. John's. Very impressive.
Yeah, it looks different on the floor with that size and that length and that, more so the speed. I mean, I think Lapp said it perfectly. Maybe it wasn't even on the air. He's like, they float. it's almost like they're not hitting the hardwood because they're just moving at that pace. And then to add to it, guys, I would expect Adu Thiro, their leading scorer, to come back
right.
in the second weekend. I mean, he was close. He practiced on Friday. He's been dealing with a knee injury, so you throw him back in the mix. I mean, it's wild. They start 0-5 in the SEC, and Cal, who's, you know, so good at spinning stuff, but he did have a line to us where he goes, well, maybe because we were so beat up and nobody played in most of January and half of February, we're fresh. And they did look. They looked fresh. They looked like the fresher team in both games, and especially in that St. John's game.
Now, who will you be covering in the Sweet 16 in the regional finals?
So I'm heading to Indianapolis. So we've got Kentucky, Tennessee, and then Purdue. So we'll get to follow Purdue, Purdue and Houston.
Hmm.
Your thoughts on those games?
I have no idea. I literally woke up to the email / text from everybody saying you're going to Indy, because they don't assign that stuff until all the games are done. So I went to bed early. It's obviously been a long weekend.
Yeah.
So I'll dive in. I mean, all great games. I'm mm-hmm. excited about that. I think the only thing on the surface, more so because I know Purdue, and then if you've watched any basketball the last however long Kelvin's been at Houston, you know what Houston is. That game's intriguing because just the contrast in styles.
Right.
Purdue's extremely efficient offensively, one of the best, if not the best, point guard in the nation in Braden Smith. But you play Houston, it's like it's similar to St. John's, but I would say worse.
Yeah.
You're in for an absolute beatdown.
And you know what? Props to Mark Pope for what he did in his first year at Kentucky, because he doesn't have the NBA talent that Arkansas has. I mean, I don't even think it's close. But the fact that he came in as a 3 seed, he kind of switched things up, more of a defensive style. I mean, props to Mark Pope coming in from BYU and getting Kentucky to the Sweet 16 to play Tennessee. I think this is the third time they're going to play this year.
Yeah, I think that aspect and layer to it is interesting for this stage in the tournament, to have so much familiarity and have it be an SEC game. And,
yep.
And then just from like a atmosphere standpoint, to have whenever Big Blue Nation shows up, it feels different. So I think we're lucky in that regard as well.
Evan, we were talking about it earlier. Is this kind of the signaling the end of the mid-major, you know, with the way the NIL is working and these superstar teams, and, you know, are the mid-majors not going to be able to keep up? I thought they would, because they'd just be more senior-laden on the whole, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, it, on the surface or initially, and that's where, guys, we're in, like, the beta stage of all of this. So, like, don't be too hard on either your own opinion that now seems wrong or others, because I think every year, every season, probably for the next few, and as the rules continue to change and sharpen, we're going to get a better understanding of things. I would say yes. The challenge from it, you have to capture the moment in the moment, if that makes sense. There's mm-hmm. no like, oh, we've got this team's got a bunch of sophomores and juniors, and, you know, they're going to be something to deal with, whether it's a Drake or somebody like that. Like, if it's going to happen, it's got to happen now, because everybody that plays well, I mean, it's amazing, having done the Missouri Valley and Mountain West, knowing just every kid that plays well in a game that's on national TV, and then if you go to the tournament, just how that completely changes their economics and the attention that they're getting. So even, like, I'm doing a Valparaiso game. Nobody's thinking about Valpo. They got two really good freshmen that if mm-hmm. they could hold on to, they would be atop the Missouri Valley, maybe be one of those mid-majors that makes a run. Both are probably in the portal already, or starting today, and who knows? I mean, that's just the – so the mid-majors have no longer become the Cinderellas. They are the minor league for the Power Fives to then go to and pluck and pay to bring in their best players.
Joined by Evan Washburn, CBS Sports reporter. He's on the Rude Guest Hotline. So how ironic is it, Evan, that the first buzzer beater in this tournament came – from Maryland, who's been murdered by buzzer beaters in their last four losses, the most recent one against Michigan. So really nice that Maryland was able to be on the right side of a buzzer beater this time instead of the wrong side.
I know, but it's funny. I mean, you say that, which is accurate, but then I immediately think of Drew Nicholas, right? Wasn't mm-hmm. that the
mm-hmm. yep.
where he's – is it Coastal Carolina? Whatever.
They're, UNC, you know, Wilmington, I think?
Wilmington, yeah.
Yeah, he's got that runner. No, it was awesome. It's funny. I was able to get home Saturday night, so I was home all day Sunday, and we were watching that game with my 9-year-old son, and that was the first time I could see him, like, invested, and he went crazy when they hit the buzzer beater. So that was awesome. And then my favorite part, I didn't catch it in the moment, but as a guy who lives in Baltimore now for the last 10 years, when I think Andy Katz asked him, you know, where the confidence comes to take that shot, and his line was, well, I'm from Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
Like, that just hit me right in the field. Mm-hmm. That was great. So I'm pumped, obviously, for that program and for all the Terps fans out there.
Especially after Kevin Willard was just grilling his AD last week.
Yeah.
I mean, publicly saying, yeah,
full mafia mode.
He needs to go. I can't work with this guy anymore. And people question whether or not the timing of that whether that should have been out in public. And we thought,
well, I think that's interesting. Like the whole timing of all this stuff.
Yes.
We were living the Will Wade experience with the news coming out.
Uh-huh.
And look, everything can be anecdotal and it's case by case, but I do think the more time I spend around these players, like, transparency is going to win out. I think we get so precious about things because we're still living in an old model in our minds and all this. And it is. It's all new and wacky and different. But I think the more that there's honesty from the players to the coaches about what they're hearing and getting and offers, and then the players, that I don't know, I found something powerful in the way the McNeese thing all played out over the course of the 3 days there in Providence.
All right, bro. Well, thanks for joining us on short notice, man. It was great. That was a great game to watch. And enjoy your trip to Indy.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
All right, thank you, buddy.
So it wasn't as bad, the Rick Pitino thing, that you made it seem like it was.
You mean for him?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It just looked very awkward on TV.
I rewatched it. It didn't look that.
He handled it very well. Both
I think
of them.
He's a pro. Yeah, but I think Pitino didn't know there was a second question coming, and he's trying to get back to his timeout. And Evan just kind of stood two steps to the side and just kept him in there and asked another question.
It's ballsy on Evan's part, you know.
It wasn't like Pitino was like Popovich.
Right.
Yeah. No. He answered the question.
He answered the second question. You know, like,
with a smile.
He didn't just give a one or two word
answer. It was just funny that he was walking away, and Evan had to come back and say, hey, follow up. And then he... No, he answered both questions. It was fine.
Right. We'll talk some Terps.
But Pitino was not happy during the interview.
We'll talk some Terps, college hoops, and their chances in the Sweet 16 with Chris Nockey coming up at 9:25 here on the Junkies.